the recording, so we are audio recording this session. And I am going to mute all, and everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves. We'll go through the deck first with the questions and shares and so forth that have come up before the meeting, and then we'll open it up to any input that people have for new items after that. If you want to input to anything that's being discussed, by all means, you can unmute yourself or you can put something into the chat window, and we'll try to cover off those things as we go through the deck. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, so we have the title slide up, I hope.
Yep.
And if I move along, first thing I want to mention is we are a PC users group, and most people run Windows on their PC, but clearly you can also run other operating systems, and the other one that most people will use is Linux. And then we all have smartphones, and some of you have iPhones, and you're beyond redemption. You've gone over to the dark side, so you want information on Apple iPhones, you have to talk to an Apple user group. But for those of us who have Android smartphones, what we need to know is that Android is basically a flavor of Linux. And if you want to know more about that, Gary Sims from Android Authority has a really good video on how Android essentially came out of Linux and what the differences are. And the URL is right there, so if you're interested in that on YouTube, you can take a look at that. Now, my reason for mentioning that is that because a lot of us do use Android smartphones and Android tablets, I guess, it might be interesting to take a look at some of the useful applications that we have. So I'm going to call this thing Smart Apps, and my intention is to have a segment in each of the Q&As which basically highlights one of the Android applications that people might find useful or entertaining or whatever. And I'm hoping that people will be prepared to share their favorites. So if you have a favorite app for an Android device, a smartphone or a tablet, send us some information to suggestion box. And if you want to give a little discussion of it, you'll be welcome to join the party. So to start us off, I'm going to highlight one of the things that I use quite a bit, and it's a reminder app. So it's called To-Do Reminder. It's essentially a calendar, but it's a calendar that has an alarm. So you can set events, and then when the alarm goes, it will tell you what the event is and what you're supposed to do. And you get a pop-up notification, and you can set the alarm for at the set time, like 7:30 for Q&A, or you can have it 10 minutes before or 30 minutes before or whatever you want. And you can choose a notification sound, and you can have repeated alarms, so it will go off every 10 minutes for, I think it's 3 times by default. And it turns out it's highly configurable, so you can do an awful lot of different things with this To-Do Reminder app. It's available from the Google Play Store. So here's the URL, but if you just search for To-Do Reminder and you look for this app by App Innovation, is the company that produces it. It's freeware, so there's no cost to this thing. It has adverts, but the adverts are, as you'll see in a second, the adverts are very minimal. And it gets pretty good reviews. Most people are rating it excellent or very good. So 4.5 out of 5 overall. When you've entered a few events, and this is the screen that you'll see if you load the app. And you can see here I've got something that when I ran this thing, I had something that was happening at 10 o'clock in the morning to check my FIDO account. And then in the next week, there was a Q&A coming up. I had to change the filter on my furnace, and it looks like I got a dental appointment at some point in the future. And when you load one of the if you load one of the apps, one of the events, then you have some space to write some text. So I just call this one Q&A. I can set a date. I can set a time. I can tell it to remind me 10 minutes before the time and not to repeat. And you recognize that the Q&A, I've told it, starts at 6:30. And this is the reminder I've set for myself so that I can send out the reminder to all you folks that we have a Q&A tonight. So you know that it works because every now and then you get a reminder message from me. One of the things I like about this app is it's very kind of user-friendly. So here I've clicked on the Add a Reminder button, and it pops up this screen in the top left-hand corner here. So I can type some text, or I can actually use the microphone, and I can dictate my text. And I've said, add a slide on to-do reminder. And I was doing this on Sunday, so that's the date, 9:35 a.m., and remind me before. And when you click on these fields, so if you want the date, and if you click on the date field here, then it pops up this kind of calendar, and you can just simply select the date, just click on the date, and that chooses the date. By the same token, you can choose the hours and the minutes, and then you can choose the remind before, 10 minutes before, 30 minutes before, or whatever. And as I say, it's very configurable. So if you go to the settings menu, this shows you three screens of individual settings. So you can choose the date format, the time format. You can choose a theme, light or dark. And you can have it notify you on the lock screen if you want. And there's all kinds of different things you can do with this thing. So it's highly configurable, and I find it really, really useful. So my question to you all is, what's your favorite Android app? And send us a note to suggestion box, and we'll include it in the next Q&A. I see a question here. Jocelyn, does it work on a PC? Does what work on a PC? The to-do reminder? It doesn't, because it's an Android app. So if you wanted to run it on a PC, you'd have to run something like BlueStacks, so you could run Android on your PC. But there are PC reminder apps that you can use as well. Okay, moving along, we have a couple more shares. So I title this Two for the Price of One, because we got a share from Chris on an Amazon add-on kind of deal. And then, if you remember last week, Linda had promised to do some basic photo editing type stuff. So, and both of those things will be coming up. And I don't know if you want to go with these slides or just screen share.
Yeah, we'll start with these. The Camelizer, I think it was Bob Harris actually who told me about this a number of years ago. It's an app you can use which will help you out shopping at Amazon. One of the problems at Amazon is that prices will change day to day, and sometimes like huge swings in the prices of particular items. And so, you know, if I'm trying to buy something, if I'm in a panic, you know, I really need it right now, that's one thing. But if I'm not in a rush, you know, should I buy it now? Should I wait for a better price? And wouldn't it be really, really nice if when you're shopping at Amazon.com or .ca, you could actually see the price history over time? How much has this particular item cost over time? Might help you to judge whether you should buy it now or wait for a better price. And wouldn't it be nice if you could be alerted if, you know, the price you want for an item actually arises? And enter the Camelizer, and it's available for Chrome, Edge, Firefox, and Opera. So next. So there's the URL for it. It's camelcamelcamel.com. And actually at this point here, I'll probably just take over as a share. So basically you follow instructions to install the extension in your browser, or you can go through this bookmarklet, which I've never actually done. So I'm going to steal control of the share. And let me just get rid of some stuff here. Okay, so what I'm going to go to here is, this is the Camel site as you see it once you've actually, you can see I'm at the main page, but it looks kind of weird. You know, it's got my alerts and things like that. That's because I've already installed it and I'm logged in to Camel. So when I go to their homepage, it actually comes up something customized to me. Let me bring this up, which is Edge. And what it's showing is the way that Camel will look to you if you're not logged into the site. And so it's pretty ugly site, actually, I find. But what you really want to do is go to either the browser extensions that you see there, or if you go down digging down on the site, you might lose that. But you always have browser add-ons up at the top of the page. So if you click on browser add-ons, it'll detect what your current browser is. So you can see here it knows that I'm on Edge, and so it'll say get it from Microsoft, and you know it's got a link there to do it. And if you're on a different browser, you can select the appropriate one to install it into your browser. You do want to create an account onto Camel as well, because it makes it a lot easier to use the product. You won't get nagged by them. The only emails I ever get from Camel are when I've set a price alert and some product has dropped to that price, and they'll send me an email saying that it's done so. So now we'll go back to, this is if I go to the Camel website as I'm logged in, you know, I can see recent alerts that something I was looking at, it actually came to a price that was $1.31 less than my desired price, and so it'd be a good idea to go ahead and buy it. So I could click on there and do it. I can also look at these price watches that I've set on, and I have a whole host of products here that I've said, well, I don't want to pay the whole price. You know, so Steve Miller Band's The Vault, I wouldn't mind that, but when I was looking at it, it was $116. There's no way that I want to spend $116. So I put a price alert on at $50, so if it ever drops to $50, I'll get an email, and then I can jump in and buy it. The current price is down to $85, so it's got a ways to go before I'm willing to part with my money for that particular product. Okay, now let's look at how we actually look at things at Amazon.ca. So here, for example, I'm on that Steve Miller The Vault, and I'm looking at that particular product. It currently is available for $85. Because I've installed the extension into Chrome, I've got this little icon at the top that looks like a camel. So if I click on that, it brings up details about the price history of this particular product. And I have to drag something else over. Okay. And so I can see that the current price is $85, which is a considerable drop, actually, from what it's been since June of this year. It was hovering around the 120, going down 110, things like that. So there's been a bit of a price drop. I might decide if I was in a little bit of a rush, well, it's dropped a bunch, I'll go ahead and get it. But who knows? Maybe it'll continue dropping. Wait, here we had it in, you know, the earlier in the spring. You know, it went down to $59. That would have been nice. And that was from Amazon. So they have Amazon pricing as well as third party. And so you can see here I've got my alert on here at $50. So if it ever drops to that, I will actually get an email telling me. Let's look at a couple of other products. So here is a wireless flash trigger that I was looking at. And if I go to the price history on that, I can see that this thing has been $87 for everything other than it looks like probably one day where it dropped down to $82. I can also go down and I can say, well, let's look at just over the last month. And so I can see that, yes, indeed, it looks like for one day they dropped a whole $5 and then they went up to $87. So if I was looking at this, I would look at that and say, well, you know, is there really any point in me waiting for a better price? Probably not. Let's look at another one here that we have. So this is a guitar finished cloth that I was looking at for my son. And I can see here that this one here was going along, all above $22, and then all of a sudden it dropped to $13.69. I had a price alert on that for $15, so I got an email for it. I looked at that and I said, well, it's probably not likely to get any cheaper. Yeah, so I jumped on and I got it. Still an outrageous price for basically a microfiber cloth, but I figured my son might find it cool. Now, look at one last one here that I've got as an example. So this is a messenger carry bag for cameras and currently on at $99. Let's look at the camel for this. This is really bizarre. Look at this cluster that you see right here of all of those, that green blocks. The price was jumping up and down like crazy. If we look at the 1 month history for that, well, actually, let's go to 3 months. We can see that from September 15th through about September 30th, every day it jumped to, it looks like, you know, going up about $155 and then down to $107. It would be crazy to have ever bought that at $152. And it looks like, you know, it's come down and it's a little bit more steady. Is it going to come down anymore? Who knows? But this gives you a real idea about, you know, how these products actually change over time. And if you go on any product at Amazon, you can actually just look at the history. You can put a price alert on it and get notified if it drops below that particular price. I think it's a really, really handy site to use. Any questions does anybody has about using Camel?
And if you want to ask a question, you need to unmute. I'll put it in the chat window.
Okay, I guess if we have no questions, I will stop the share, and we'll turn it back over to Alan to lead us into the deck for the next share.
Okay, so we got my second and next slide up?
Yep.
All right, so this is photo editing with Linda, our favorite videographer.
Not video. Okay, well, the idea behind the demonstration I'm going to show you tonight, it'll be about 15 minutes, is for people who maybe are just getting started with photo editing, or as well for people who have maybe tried it with other programs, got overwhelmed because they were maybe fancier than you needed. And it's sometimes easier to start with something simple and advance to something more complicated. There's just some of these programs, there's so many icons in that it can be very overwhelming. So what I want to show people is that there is an app right built into Windows 10. It's called the Photos app, and it handles a lot of basic tasks. And it's sort of where I started. I was using Picasa, but it disappeared. And then I started using this, and I found it fast, I found it easy, and I could do a lot of the basic things I tend to do when I come back from a holiday and I got a zillion photos. I could do all the basics, bang, 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 and then think about other ones that maybe needed a little more comprehensive techniques. So covering cropping, it covers lighting adjustments, color, has a clarity button, a red eye, and a spot fix. So I'll kind of show you how to use those, but also let you know what the limitations of them are. So next slide, please. Okay, so once you're comfortable with that, then when you know the basics, it's much easier to go to a more complex program because you kind of know what you're looking for, you kind of know how things work, and then you can home in on things like masking or cloning or other special effects that you won't get in Windows Photos. And so for that, I do recommend either Photoscape X, which is free, Photopad, which is free, and Chris is actually, for the library presentations, he put together a comparison of a few of the free photo packages, and if you want a copy, he'd be happy to send you that, or I've got a copy I can send you.
We'll get that posted along with the deck on our Q&A website.
Great. Okay. So next. So there's two ways to open Windows Photos. You can open it just from your start button and go to Photos, which will open it into one way, and I'll show you in the next screen. But the next one, this is the second way to open a photo. So I tend to use this way. You right-click on the photo, say open with, and then go down to Windows Photos. And I just find it easier, and I'll show you why. So in the next slide, if you open it through the program, it takes you to this screen, and it's got collections. I have no idea what these are. These are not collections I've put together. These aren't names. I've named them on this day, November, and that's not November just passed. That's November of 2019. So why they picked these and why they call them these names, I have no idea. So I don't particularly like this, but if you go below that, you'll see that there's photos by date, and on the very right-hand side, you can see this bar that indicates a timeline, which is fine. So here I'm on one day in October 2020, and you're like, well, why are there three pictures? Well, because I take one off my camera and I put it in my original file, and then I make a copy and I put it in my working area, and then I might have done a few tweaks and put it up into another folder for Dropbox. And I don't bother renaming them because I have separate folders. So this is useless to me because I don't know which one's which. It's just by date. So I don't use this screen. Okay, next folder, next slide, please. But you can see at the top there is this folders button you can click on, and this is much more useful if you want to go this route. So you click on folders and make sure you're on folders, and then there's your picture, your standard pictures folder, and then below you can see ones that I've dated and given names to, so I have a much better idea of where I can go to get my photos. But frankly, I just find right-clicking on the photo, one photo in your folder, and it will basically open your whole folder. You just arrow through. It starts with that picture, but it's not like you have to go back and right-click on the second photo. It will open the whole folder. Okay. Slide. So I will share a quick demo then here. Okay, so I've opened Windows. Can everybody see that okay?
Yep.
Okay, so I've opened Windows Photos by right-clicking on a photo, and what it does is it automatically puts you into this Windows editor. I'm just going to have to get rid of the gallery here because it's totally in my way. Okay, so it puts you into this editor mode, and it shows you the picture fairly large. Now, if you want to arrow through your folder, the arrows are kind of hidden. You have to hover over them, and that will take you to the next photo. And on the other side, you can go to the photo before it. Now, there's first thing you kind of often want to do when you're first starting with photo editing is cropping. There's a quick crop button at the top. I don't tend to use that because I want to see everything. I might want to do more than just cropping. So I always go to the edit and create and get my full menu. So I click on that, and then you click on the edit. And then at the top, it's going to give you your crop and rotate filters, which I don't use, and adjustments, which are your lighting adjustments. So right away, it's brought me into crop and rotate, which is perfect. This is also where you can straighten your photo. So it's really easy. You just click on the button, the little circle there, and you pull it left or right to straighten your photo if it needs straightening. So very simple. This is where you'd want to crop, especially if you want to print it at a store. You want to get that exact aspect ratio of 4x6, that dimension of 4x6 or 8x10 or 5x7 that you know the store will print for you. And if you don't crop it, they will, and it might, and they're not going to care that they chop off half the bottom of your photo or something. You're going to have to crop it before you send it in because most your camera might not be set to 4x6. So I'm just going to click down the little chevron here on aspect ratio, and that will give me all my choices. Now, original means how it came out of the camera. I actually have my camera set to 3x2 or 4x6. I have it set for that because I like that dimension, but your camera may not. So in this instance, I'm going to leave it at original. We're going to put it at original, and I'm just going to show you that if I wanted to crop this, because I've got too much space at the top, it's a people photo, so I like to get in tight. When I pull down that corner, I'm only pulling down that corner, it automatically pulls down both the top and the side to maintain that aspect ratio of 4x6. No matter where I put and no matter what I sent to Walmart or whatever, it's going to print a 4x6 picture as long as I've maintained that ratio. So I'm going to pull it in tight because I don't need all the information. And then you can just pull the photo over with your mouse and I'm just trying to get at the main part of the photo that's appealing to me, and that's the faces. I don't need extraneous backs and arms and shoulders and things like that. To me, that's a better picture. So then you just do a save a copy down at the bottom here, and you're good to go. I'm just going to cancel that.
Linda, so before you move on, do you have the ability to set free form so you don't have to go with a particular? Okay, sorry.
Okay, so I'm going to go on to the next photo. So we're just going to cancel out of this. And it'll take me back here, and I'm just going to arrow to the next photo. We're going to go back into edit and create, edit again, and we're going to crop it again. This time, I'm going to do a free form. So that's custom at the top. And this is perfect if you're just going to post it on Facebook or online. You don't have to worry that it's 4x6 or 8x10 because you're not going to print it. And I thought, well, you know, I got this nice close-up of my nephew and his daughter, but I thought, I can get even closer. Like, I don't need the top of his head, and I don't need all this space over here. So I got to put it in tight. I can move it a little bit. And all of a sudden, I can see your eyelashes better. I can see the smiles better. And to me, that's a nicer picture. Again, I can just save a copy, and it will crop it to that dimension. Okay, so I'm going to cancel this again. And we're going to go on to the next photo. Did it take it? Cancel. Hit the wrong button. Okay, and we're going to look at this one. This is one of my sister. And we often do this. We know it's tough when you put somebody in front of a window. It's backlit and it's tricky. But you still do it. You still want to do it. It happens. So, but I know I can adjust. So what I want to do in this one is go into Edit and Create again. And I'm going to do lighting adjustments. So they're at the top here. I'm going to click on the lighting adjustment with the sun icon. And I have various adjustments. So what I want to do is lighten her face a bit and body and darken what's outside. So if I lighten the whole image, which I can with this slider bar, it lightens everything. So, yes, my sister's better lit, but the background is way overexposed. So we don't want that. So I'm going to put that back, and then I'm going to click on the chevron, and it gives me a nice menu of lighting adjustments. So what this photo needs is to darken the highlights. So I'm going to grab that highlights slider bar, and I'm going to pull it right over, maybe as far as I can, just so you can see the difference. And then I'm going to lighten the shadows. So I'm going to pull that to the right so we get a better exposure on her face and inside. So I think that looks much better, but I'll prove it to you because you can click this button at the top that says undo all, and then you can redo all, and you can see the difference. Okay, so very, very simple. It's not hard to understand. Play with the slider bars. If you're not sure, just play around, and you'll see if you go to the extreme what the effect is. There's also color. I don't use this as much, but if you're trying to adjust the color, there is, I think if you just drag it, it's a saturation, basically. So you might want to saturate a bit if it's fall colors or something. The tint kind of goes from a greenish to a pinkish tone. And then the warmth, or it's sometimes called temperature in other programs, kind of goes from blue to reddish. Okay, so you can think about those. So I'm going to cancel this one, and we're going to go on to the next image. Now on this one, this is more a travel photo. Go back into edit. What this one needs, it's, you know, the mist in Ireland. It wasn't raining, but, you know, my eye saw through all the mist, but the camera didn't. So what I want to do is some lighting adjustments there. So I'm going to expand the lighting area. But I also might want to build in some clarity, so we'll play with that too. So first of all, I think it could use a little contrast. So I'm going to pull the contrast over, and you can see, yeah, that did kind of sharpen things up a bit, but it did darken a fair area to the left here of my photo. That's okay. We can just lighten the shadow by pulling that shadow bar over a little bit. And then I can say, okay, but maybe just a little more clarity. So I'm going to go down this clarity button and pull that over and cut through the mist just a little more. So we'll do an undo there and a redo, and you can see the difference. And then I think, you know what, I don't really like the way this is cropped, so I'm just going to go right back to my little, now that I've got this done, I'm going to crop it because I haven't really saved anything yet. I'm going to say, you know, that sky's pretty boring. I'm just going to bring that down a bit, and maybe I got a bit too many of these flowers. which are probably considered weeds in Ireland, but not for us. And there, I think that's a better picture. Didn't take long, and not a lot of effort trying to mask things or anything like that. So I'm going to cancel out of that. And we'll go to the next image. Now, here's an easy fix to do red eye. So again, back into edit and create, edit and adjustments. And you can see there is a red eye function here. So I'm going to click on that. Now, as I say, things are limited in this program. It's free. And so you can't really change the size of this circle. So kind of hover over and say, well, maybe I'll zoom in a little bit. And you zoom in with these plus minus buttons at the bottom here. You just zoom in until the circle looks about the right size. And you're pretty sure you're going to be able to cover that area and get it black. And you just go over and you dot it. And you're done. This is a spot fix underneath. It's good for blemishes. So there's a few blemishes here we can just touch up, and you just literally touch it and click and click and click and click, and you're good to go. You can't make the circle any bigger. You can't make it into an oblong. It's not a clone brush, but it's not bad for beginners and just to get yourself started getting the feel for photo editing. Okay? Okay, so the last picture I want to demonstrate is one actually that Bea sent in, and she's on the call tonight. So this is a photo, a 50-year-old photo that was scanned from a slide, and, you know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of interesting. I can see why somebody would want to preserve this, but it's gotten scratched or there was dirt on the slide when it was scanned or whatever. So we're just going to go in and fix that up a little bit. Now, I'll just say I'm just going to fix up a little bit, and then we might crop it, because there's some areas where this program is just not going to be able to do it. Other programs would, like these areas where the colors are quite different. This program can't cope with that. But we're just going to do our best. So I'm going to go into the spot fix, and instead of blemishes on someone's face, I'm going to take all these little dots out, and it's not going to take me long. You can zoom in so you're sure you've got the dot. If you zoom, you have to be careful when you zoom that you've got this dot in the area you want, and then you can scroll in. Otherwise, if you scroll in, it's hard to move around. Anyway, you'll get used to it. You can write me. But basically, you just click away, and there's stuff at the bottom maybe here, or little dots on the blanket or on the flag, etc. So, you know, it doesn't take long. And it gives you a much nicer image and, you know, something that you've scanned. And it's a lot easier to just click these dots than to try and clean a slide and rescan it. Okay, so that's probably what I would do on that for cleaning it up. And then, okay, so the colors are good, but I find the face is a little dark. So I'm going to go into the lighting adjustments, and I'm just going to lighten those shadows. So I'm going to pull the shadow bar over to lighten their shadows, they're lighten their faces without ruining my sky or getting rid of any of that blue. I want to keep that blue. And then because it is an old photo, I'm just going to try and bump the clarity a bit so we get a little bit more definition, not too much because it can start to look phony. And you can play around and adjust the shadows. And then I'm just going to go right back into crop and say, you know what, I don't need this much sky, and I'm going to get rid of that kind of ugly part that I couldn't adjust for, maybe pull it in a bit, tighten it in a little bit here, but not get rid of the whole tent. We want the tent to show. So there it is. It's, you know, a 3-4 minute job, and obviously B's going to go in and get rid of every single dot. I think I gave her one version where I cleaned it up a little more, but just to show you an example of how you can fix up old photos. So I think that's all I was going to demo, and I think that shows, hopefully shows the main features of this program. And as I say, the main advantage is it's free, and it's probably already sitting on your computer. So I will stop sharing.
Well, before you do does anybody have any questions or want Linda to demonstrate a particular aspect of using Windows Photos before she stops?
There was one question, Linda. What was the name of the program? I think it's Windows Photos.
Yes.
Presumably it's part of Windows 10.
Yes.
Do you know if it's available in any earlier versions, like 7?
I don't believe so. I think it was, Chris might know better, I believe it was new at Windows 10.
I'm not sure, but certainly this version of the program, it's undergone a number of revisions, and if it was available in a previous version of Windows, it would be nowhere near what this program is at this point in time anyways.
But if you only have Windows 7 or 8 on your machine,
no.
I just don't think it's there.
Yeah. Currently in the store, it's only for Windows 10.
Okay. And it's also available for Mac, if you have any friends that have Macs. It's available for Mac, and the interface looks I'm thinking of another program. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was going to say, I didn't know that.
I was thinking of Forescape X, which I will show some other day.
Okay.
Justin says, having to select edit all the time is annoying.
Sorry, what was the question?
Well, it's a comment, I guess. Having to select edit all the time is annoying.
Yeah, it's two clicks.
Yes, and that's the kind of thing that you would not necessarily have to do if you're in a fancier program or a paid program. The Photoscape X, that's a free and a little more comprehensive, you just drag the photo in. You have to save it or not save it, and then you just drag the next photo in. So it's one more click. Yes, one more click.
And Joss, you can happily hit Windows F on your keyboard, which will bring up Windows the feedback hub, and you can go in and you can tell Microsoft that this is annoying to have to click edit all the time. And who knows, if enough people agree with you, maybe they'll change it. Any other questions? Joss just said, "LOL, you're right." I'm actually quite amazed at how good a program this is for just being included. It's on every Windows 10 computer that you ever use. It's there and usable, and it's a surprisingly capable program.
And somebody's saying that they've used Windows Photo Classic for years and believe it's the forerunner, and it's been in Windows 7 for a long time.
Okay. Good to know.
I'd like to say that Linda's advice had me fix a few photos that were really, really dark, unusable. But I saw Linda fix one we took to the church, and I tried a couple of times, and it's really doable. You can take a photo that is complete garbage. And so I got one of Bob Benson in his garage. We'll mention that. And it was too dark, and I fixed it up, and wow, it just came into a crisp, you wouldn't know it.
It's amazing how much you got me doing that. I enjoy trying to rescue photos, and I have a little more practice than Chris because I'm not as good at Chris as taking the perfect photo on the site. He's better at setting up his camera, so I make more mistakes, so I learn more when I get home about photo editing.
Well, you can really save the bad ones. It's amazing.
You can rescue a lot of bad ones.
You're right.
I mean, people have said to me, I'm going to go home, and I've thrown out all my, you know, old photos, my old trip photos, because they were so dark or ugly, or I couldn't see anything. I thought that's too bad, because now in this day and age, you could dig them out and probably would have been able to rescue them. But
yep. Thank you. Good show.
I agree with Linda that it's so much easier than trying to get those dots off the original. It's just that. Much faster.
That's good.
And actually it works. Trying to get the dust off the slides just never works out.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Excellent.
Okay, I will I'm back, so I'm out. Okay, I'm good. I'll be back.
You had the share stolen from you.
Yes, that's
sorry, I thought we were done. Sorry. I moved along. All right, so the first question is dealing with the Google Play Store, where the install button has been grayed out. And Chris has some words on this.
This was kind of funny because when Alan shared his deck with me before tonight about the to-do reminder, I went to the Play Store on my PC rather than from my phone, and I went to to-do reminder, and it said that it was compatible with all my devices, but the install button was grayed out. So I wondered, well, that's kind of weird. I can't, you know, normally I can go there, say install, and it will push it to my mobile devices. So I did a little bit of searching around, and I happened to find a solution to this one. If you go to the next slide. If you remove the end of the URL, had ampersand GL equals US, and if you remove that, all of a sudden, the install button is no longer grayed out. I have no idea if this is a globally common thing, if it's always ampersand GL equals US or whatever, but if you happen to go to the Google Play Store from your PC wanting to push an app to your phone or tablet and it's grayed out, take a look at the end of the URL, and if it's got ampersand GL equals US or something similar, try just removing that, hit enter, and the page will reload, and hopefully the install button is no longer grayed out.
Strange. Interesting, Chris, that it said it was compatible with all your devices, because when I go to the Play Store on my PC, it says there aren't any devices available, or something to that effect.
Okay, you have to be logged in using the same Google account on your PC as your mobile devices. Are you happen to be logged into Google?
I'm not logged in at all, accounts?
Yeah. No. So you do have to be logged into Google, Chrome or whatever on your PC into the store, as well as your device using the same account for this to work that way.
I thought it saw the PC and realized it wasn't an Android device.
No, because if you are logged in using the same account, like I have a tablet and an Android phone, and so it knows and it can push to those devices.
Okay. Stuart's suggesting that this is a geo-blocking problem.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what the GL is. Obviously, U.S. is referring to, I presume, the United States, but I don't know what GL is all about.
Geolocate.
Maybe. I have no idea. It's far from universal, though, because I've done this lots of times before, going to the Google Play Store on my PC and pushing apps to my phone. So I don't know why To-Do Reminder had that on the URL, no idea.
Okay, next question we had from Sue. She's basically saying that her internet plan is 20 gigabytes per month for $47. Last month she got a Windows update and some other stuff and ran way over 33 gig, and the bill went up to $150+. And the upload and download speeds are slow, so she's running 6 megabits per second in the lowest available level. And this is for everybody. What would everybody recommend for the internet speed, the amount of traffic per month, and the cost? Because clearly if you go up in terms of faster internet connection and more gigabytes per month, you end up with more dollars. So at some point, there's kind of a trade-off. There must be a sweet spot. The question is, what does everybody think that is? Now, don't forget, you have to unmute yourself to answer or put something in the chat window. EOD is saying, look into National Capital Freenet.
Okay, well, before I'd even go there, what options are available to this person? Sorry, I didn't catch the name.
Sue. I don't know if she's on the call tonight. I didn't check.
Okay.
Now she's with Bell. And I think she has a bundle of internet, phone, and TV.
Okay.
But they're not giving her any deals. She phoned them today, and they don't want... They have a deal on right now, but it's only available for new customers.
Right. But what service is available to her home? What is the quote-unquote last mile offering to her residents?
I think right now she's on DSL, but I don't know.
If she's only getting 6 down and 1 up, then it would be DSL that she's on currently. But it might be that she has 5 available or whatever as well. So.
But if she did have 5 available... And let's make it clear, not the marketed 5, which is really just DSL given a different name, which Bell will do, unfortunately. But the question is, what is available to her residents? Is it only just Bell? If it is, then what she has is what she gets, and she would have to move to get a better connection.
I don't know. She's not on the call line, so we...
I get that. I mean, I have one of my colleagues who is in a rural situation, and long story short, she's at the edge of where the networks are being provided. Now, that being said, I also have my parents in a fairly nicely populated subdivision in Brighton, and there's a dividing line halfway through the subdivision where half of the people get Bell fiber, fast, over multitudes over 100 megabytes in download speed, and upload speeds very much 10 megabytes and up. And then once you go past that neighborhood, you're down to 11 and 1, and that's it. Thank you. Don't look anywhere else. So that I'm afraid the question needs to be put, if Bell isn't able to offer her better service, can she, does her residence allow her to be connected to someone else that can? And I know we don't know, but what I'm saying to you as well is that it's very dependent on where a person lives, is on on how good of an internet service they can take advantage of.
I think one thing that's clear is in the traffic. I mean, she's obviously needing more than 20 gigabytes if she went to 33. So if that's the trend that she figures, like, she can pretty much guarantee that, she probably wants 50 gigabytes per month, I would think, as a minimum. But in terms of speed, yeah, it's whatever you can afford and whatever is available. It's difficult to answer something like this.
I know in Alexandria, a very simplistic environment, you either have Eastlink or Bell. Now, you can go ExploreNet or a couple of other wireless examples, but, they claim they give faster speeds, but the reality is it's still wireless, and there's certain you don't get the speed that you get if you have a wired connection. Let's just say that. So with that being said, with Bell, it is 11 down, 1 megabyte up, period. End of story. That's all that's offered. Now, at some point, they're supposedly going to bring in fiber into Alexandria. Once that happens, they'll open things up. Then there's Eastlink, and that you can get 150 megabytes down, 10 megabytes up, and that's, I don't even think that's the highest package they offer. But there's just, my point is that there's two offerings. That's it.
It really depends where you are, Lawrence, as you say. In Ottawa, we're lucky that we have a lot of different options, I think.
Yeah.
But it depends on the neighborhood.
Maybe, I don't know.
Some of it depends as well on, in terms of pricing, certainly, how aggressive you are in talking with the providers. When I consolidated, I was using TechSavvy for internet. I had Bell for landline, and I had Rogers for TV. And when I consolidated all of it to Rogers, one of the first things I argued was that your best price on your website, I want that. I don't care if it's for new customers. I should get it. And they quickly relented on that one and gave me the best price that was listed on the website. And as well, I'm now with, I've got 300 megabit per second download, 30 megabit per second upload on my internet. I get more TV channels than I was getting before. And I get a landline for, I think I'm paying now $120 a month. So I'm quite happy with that. And I highly encourage anybody who's with the service provider now that is offering any special deal for new customers, get on the phone with them and tell them that, no, you're a customer, that you've been loyal to them, giving them money for years and years, and you want that price, and that's all there is to it. And I've never had them say no to me, and I did it on Linda's behalf and brought her bill down about 50 or 60 bucks a month just by a phone call. So don't put up with crap from the, right. the providers.
So I've had both things happen, Chris. I've had one guy who gave me the best price ever, and I've had another person who said they weren't prepared to deal. So it's right, that's another thing that's highly dependent, I think.
Yep.
Stuart's got the right idea. Stuart says maybe she could steal the neighbor's Wi-Fi.
But, I mean, to the other person, whoever's ELD, at NCF is saying here, you got to be careful. Yes, and some independent internet providers use the Bell system. So again, it comes down to the last mile. If the Bell system is a DSL with the maximum of 11 megabytes, no amount of promises will increase that 11 megabytes even more. And they will promise that better service, including Bell, and yet when you say to them, but hang on a second, that's the same service that you're giving me now, 11 megabytes, right? Oh, yeah, but it could be better, but will it? Well, no, it's based on the same infrastructure. Well, I'm only getting 11 megabytes. So you do have to be careful, but in Chris's point, if she does have options, then well, she needs to phone other providers and say, hey, can you provide me service at this residence, and how much?
Yeah, Eldon's saying he lives in Bell's Corners, and he was using Rogers, and the speed was awful. He switched to Distributel, which uses the Rogers infrastructure, and the speed was still awful, but he was paying a lot less. But he's looking at switching again. And Stuart says Starlink ought to shake things up. That's a satellite provider. Just came online recently. And I actually use TechSavvy. I used Chris's recommendation from a long time ago. They actually had a decent price, but then because of the higher court ruling just recently, they increased everything by about 10 bucks. But if you're looking for the sweet spot, it's kind of tough. For 6 megabits, it's about $40-$45, depending whether it's DSL or cable. If you go up to 25 megabits, it's more like $60. If you go to 75 megabits, then it's about $65 to $70. So you really have to, like Chris said, you have to decide how much you're willing to pay and what it's worth to you. Another suggestion that came to me quite recently, actually from Jeff Dubois, who, if you remember, was on the board at one time, and he's gone to a company called Sunwire, and he's paying for 75 megabits per second, he's paying $53. Free
That's
installation, free modem rental, and allowing to suspend the service if you want to. He's running a cottage, so he wants to suspend the service for the winter. And the thing he likes is the support center's in Sudbury, so he's talking to somebody who can speak English for once in their lives.
Okay, so not wanting
choices. You just have to pay your money and decide what you want and how much you're willing to pay.
Yeah. Shop around. It can vary widely. Now, I think we've covered this a fair amount, and I don't want to cut it off necessarily, but we did have an early question on it in the Q&A from B, so I don't want to bypass that. B had a question: does anyone have a recommendation for a range extender? And you need to worry about security with extenders. I can certainly speak a little bit to the security on the extenders. Basically, they just use, they're another Wi-Fi device on your network that connects to your main wireless hub. and then it broadcasts out from there. So it allows you to get larger distance away from your main Wi-Fi router. So from a security point of view, you shouldn't have to worry about it any more than you would worry about the security on your Wi-Fi network anyways. I don't personally have any recommendations on range extenders. So does anybody out there, have you been using any range extenders, and have you found them to be particularly good, bad, pricey, inexpensive, easy to set up, difficult to set up? Any comments at all?
Yes. If you're looking, and I didn't get a chance to buy it myself or my parents, but if you're looking for a wired experience without needing to run network cabling, the extenders that plug into your electrical outlets, if your electrical is running clean, i.e. there isn't a lot of noise, and I realize I'm using the term noise, but I don't know what that really means from an engineering perspective. I'm hoping someone else does, but the fact is that if you have a noise-free electrical environment in your house, the extenders that plug into your walls will work quite well, but you have to try them out to find out if it will or will not work. It's one of those you won't know until you try, and then be prepared to take it back to the store if it doesn't work. Then the next option is the wireless extenders. If you can get one positioned that is near the base unit, or have a string of them almost line of sight or almost underneath with very little wireless type instruction like metal and so forth, they will work quite well. Pricing between $50 and $70, stick with the main brands, D-Link, TP-Link. I did a fair bit of research before I bought one for my parents, and stay away from the cheaper ones. Go with the ones that are between the $50 and $100. I prefer to have one with some sort of antennae sticking out, because I think that's going to make a difference. Maybe it doesn't, but call me old fashioned. And with that in play, you try it, and if it works, it's a wonderful thing. But it won't work in all circumstances.
Andrew just posted that the extenders that plug into electrical circuit are called power line units, and the wiring must be on the same electrical circuit within the home. Most home setups, I believe, are split one side to the other, and so you really have half of your house powered by one side and half powered by the other, and so you would have to have both your wireless router and the extender on the same half of the electrical circuit.
Again, it's one of those, a lot of the reviewers were saying your house will either let it work or it doesn't work. And you'll find out real quick if it does or not.
Okay, I don't see any other comments, and we are just coming up on 8:30. Do we have any last-minute things that people want to bring up that can be handled quite quickly? If not, we will allow or we'll recommend any new stuff to go into the suggestion box at opcug.ca email address, and I'll let Alan wrap it up for the night.
Okay, just two things. The next Tech Cafe is on Monday, November 30th, and this is our good friend Chris, who's going to tell you how to secure a wireless network. And just a reminder that if you want to sit in on that, you have to register with the library, so they will send you the credentials for the Zoom video conference on Monday morning. Our next Q&A will be next week, December the 2nd. As Chris said, if you have any more questions. If you want to provide input into the questions that Chris posts on the announcement list, or if you have things that you want to share, including your favorite Android app, send it to the suggestion box at opcug.ca. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks very much, folks.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks a lot.